This is DiPietro, Canty, and Rothenberg.
We go around the horn. Let's say good morning to the guys. Good morning, Chris Canty. How are you?
I'm doing well. Good morning, Dave. Good morning, Rick. I don't know about you guys, but things start to feel like they're getting a little bit scary. I thought that New York was the epicenter of the coronavirus and that once we got past the height of the pandemic in our area, that this thing would go away. But it's looking scary for the rest of the country, Dave. And, you know, a week ago I was optimistic about the return to sports. Now, not so much, just because I realize so many areas of the country are being impacted and so much of our medical infrastructure is being overwhelmed right now with the new cases of the coronavirus. So this is starting to get really, really scary. And I'm not worried about us as much in the tri-state as I am the rest of the country.
Yeah, but it feels like, and we'll get to Rick in a second, it feels, Chris, like, you know, we've taken it very seriously and taken all the precautions, and we've really done a great job in this area, and a lot of the rest of the country have not done the same, and you look at the situation that they're in right now.
No, you're absolutely right, Dave, and I mean, the governor of Texas, Governor Abbott, said that, you know, they were a little bit premature in terms of starting to reopen restaurants and bars, and that contributed to the massive spread, and right now, their medical professionals are being overwhelmed, and they're pushing the pause button on reopenings of a lot of businesses down there. And I know folks are struggling financially, but the reality is that people are getting infected, and with the more cases that pop up, the more we run the risk of Americans losing their lives. So this is a very, very delicate situation, but it's a very fragile situation. And when you interject sports and the restarts of all of these different leagues, I just don't know if we're going to be able to have these sports come back and complete the entirety of their seasons. I just right now, it's hard for me to be optimistic about it, just seeing all of the new information that we're getting on the virus.
All right. And let's bring in our other dear friend, the one and only Rick DiPietro. Good morning, Rick.
Good morning, David. Good morning, Christopher. I'd just like to take this opportunity. I've consulted my wife and children. I would like to opt out of 2020.
I think we would all like to opt out. Can you imagine? I mean, Carl Reiner died last night or this morning. I mean,
it's one thing after another.
This year is just, this is biblical proportions of awful this year.
Yeah, I don't know how it gets much worse.
Don't say that.
No, I don't. Again, I hate to say that, but I mean, it just seems like every single day it's something new.
I was reading something yesterday about a pig flu that they're concerned about now as another pandemic. Did you see that thing?
Yeah,
well,
in China.
Pig flu, then you got to have the regular flu, and then you have, I mean, has COVID-19, is there a new strand of COVID-19? I mean, then you got the World Health Organization saying this is just the beginning. I mean, if this is the beginning, I mean, what are we talking about? I always come back to the same thing, though. Here's the question, because it depends on who you talk to, what state and everything else. Is it that the states opened up too quickly, or the people in those states aren't taking the proper precautions?
I think it's a combination of both.
Yeah, I agree. Yep.
I think it's a combination of both. But when you have, you know, elected officials coming out and saying we were too early in opening up, I think you have to take him at his word. And that's what we saw over the weekend down in Texas.
Yeah, but I feel like there's a difference between being open. Like the things around here that I see that are opening up, like when, you know, when restaurants started to open up with outdoor seating, or you know, earlier on when you're going to get takeout and you had, you know, you'd show up, you'd pay over the phone, you'd pull up, open up your trunk, they throw the food in and you're gone.
You wouldn't go anywhere near the person.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, just, and again, you know, I'm the NFC South insider, but I mean, just the lack of precautions being taken in Florida is mind boggling. I get that. I mean, it kind of goes back to the conversations we keep having about these teams that, you know, these sports that won't be inside the bubble. You know, we're talking about NFL, Major League Baseball. You're putting your trust in your teammates to do the right thing. Kind of like if you open up your state, you're trusting your constituents to social distance, to take proper precautions. And I don't necessarily know if they were. Listen, I know from people I talk to in Florida, they're not.
They're not.
They're not.
But look at all the places that we've seen. Texas, Arizona, Florida, and we've said for weeks and weeks, and even more than that, that these are concerning places because they're just not taking it seriously. And what are the places, Chris, that are having these unbelievable outbreaks right now? Florida, Texas, Arizona. So it goes to show you that if you don't take it seriously, and you don't social distance, and you don't wear the mask, this is what's going to happen.
But a couple of months ago, Dave, we were talking about how this thing was going to subside once we got to the summer months because the virus didn't like heat. And it feels like the exact opposite is happening. You're having record spikes across the country. I mean, I think on Friday we had over 40,000 new cases of coronavirus, which was a new high since the start of the pandemic in this country. So, I mean, it doesn't feel like we're moving in the right direction. And when you hear medical professionals talking about, you know, the window shrinking for us to get control of the coronavirus, right, it feels like it's scary. And now it almost trivializes what we're talking about when we discuss the restart to sports. And I know that's our job, but I mean, how realistic is it that these sports teams are going to be able to come back and they're going to be able to keep these athletes safe enough to continue on with the season and with NHL and NBA on into the postseason? It just doesn't feel like it's very realistic at this point.
I like the NBA and NHL's chances much more than I like Major League Baseball or football.
Yeah. Well, because they're locked away.
Yeah, they're locked away. And the other thing, I was doing some reading on this morning, which I thought was pretty interesting. Because remember I had the story a couple days ago in observations that the gal in WWE got COVID-19 for the second time?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So I was trying to figure out, you know, because they talk about the antibodies.
Did you say gal, by the way?
Gal, yeah.
Yeah, okay.
Young lady?
Yeah.
Gal.
Well, I don't know. I have a gal I feel like I'm talking to a grandparent, but go ahead.
That young gal. That young
gal. That young gal.
That young woman, the young lady. She said she got it for the second time. So she had gotten it earlier in March, got through it, and then turns out, I think it was last week, tested positive again. So I was trying to figure out, with college football coming back, with NBA players testing positive, NHL players testing positive, are people assuming that because you got it, that now this frees you up with the antibodies that you won't get it again? So I wanted to figure out, do some research if that was the case. And from all the reading I did, it sounds like, and this may be why they're looking at fall as, you know, a real risk, is that it sounds like this could be similar to the flu. And there's not enough answers yet, but this thing could mutate and could have a different strand. So whatever strand you have now that you got, you'll be immune for a certain time because you have those antibodies, but you're still susceptible to this thing if it mutates and it's a different strand. You know, like if you get a shot for, if you get the vaccination for influenza A, and all of a sudden you come in contact with influenza B, you'll get influenza B. You know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. So it could be similar. Which actually maybe in hindsight gives you more hope if you're the NHL and NBA that whatever they're getting now, because it's only the next couple months, they'll be immune to this moving forward until all of a sudden it, you know, you get into the fall months when their seasons will be over. But I don't know, man. Everything you read, I mean, there's just not enough answers at this point.
No. And you keep reading that, you know, talk about the second wave in the fall and the second wave, and then the experts say, but we're just in the midst of the first wave right now. Forget about the second wave. We're right in the belly of wave number one, and we're not even close to being out of that.
No, because, I mean, and again, you're asking people to do the right thing. And if
and
they don't do the right thing,
they
or
just
depending
don't.
On what they don't, because they, I mean, they choose what they want to believe, what information that they want to believe. And there's so much information out there. I mean, there are people that believe that, you know, unless you're wearing the N95 mask plus a mask on underneath that, it's no use because the particles are so small that no mask is going to protect you anyway. So why would I wear a mask?
Okay, well, you can say that to me is just ridiculous. I mean, all the healthcare professionals have said, wear a mask. It limits the spread. We did that in the tri-state area, and look at where we are now. We're clearly on the other side. We flatten the curve as it pertains to COVID-19, and yet we're still practicing social distancing and taking certain precautions because we recognize how deadly this virus can be. I don't think there are a lot of folks out there that realize what this thing could get to. And then once we got to Memorial Day weekend and the unofficial start of the summer, people decided that the 2 months that we did with self-quarantining was enough. And the reality is that it wasn't. And now we're dealing with the consequences of those selfish actions and that mentality. Chris Carlin had the best take on this. I mean, he put it out there on Twitter. Wearing a mask means you respect other people. That's it. Even if you don't believe that it protects you any more than not wearing a mask, at least wear the mask so you could protect other people and try to limit the spread to some degree. I just don't understand why folks feel like it's such an infringement on their liberties to wear a mask. We all have to work together in order to beat this thing. I don't understand why you got some folks out there that are intent on doing their own thing.
But it feels like a lot, doesn't it? It doesn't feel like it's the idle person here or there. I mean, you see these videos of other places, and there are just hundreds of people gathered together, and they seem to not care or not believe. And it's incredible to me.
Well, here's the thing, Dave. When you have elected officials, you know, not setting the example that we need in terms of the urgency and the seriousness that we have to approach this pandemic with, then I think that opens the door for people to continue with whatever beliefs that they have about the severity of this coronavirus.
Well, it empowers you, right? I mean, if the people in power don't tell you the right thing, then it kind of empowers you to go ahead with the wrong thing, because they're saying it's okay.
Not just tell you the right thing, but model the right thing too, as well, Dave. You know what I mean?
Totally.
Like, what you say matters, but what you do also matters. And so that's part of the frustration that for a lot of people that are trying to do the right thing, so we do get on the other side of this thing as a country. And, you know, right now we're in the thick of it. And it's hard to see sports being able to chart a path forward without everybody in and around this country taking this thing as serious as we need to.
Yeah, the whole thing is very upsetting. So now we have, you know, the potential return of sports, and it feels like we're three-ish weeks away, right? Baseball starts tomorrow. Guys reporting for spring training, July 1.
Summer training.
And then
training,
the first
basically.
Games are supposed to be summer. July 23rd and 24th, right? That's where we are with baseball?
Summer training, yeah.
Yeah. Oh, whatever. But did you see what Buster Olney said?
Yeah, 5% chance they start, 0% chance they finish?
Yep.
Yeah.
Oh, that's the reality. Upsetting.
Yeah, but of course it's upsetting. I mean, that's the reality of it. I mean, if, you know, same can be said about the NFL. I mean, it's when you're going to have a situation where it's not a bubble situation. There's a lot of things out of your control, including, you know, what your players do after they leave the facility, especially on top of that, when you start talking about, I mean, these expanded rosters and everything else. Yeah, I mean, they're going to have their hands full. I don't know how you keep it from spreading, especially with a lot of these guys not showing any symptoms. It's scary. Financially, they're going to try to get through it. I mean, financially,
of course,
they have to try to get through it.
I mean, they can do whatever they can to push through 60 games.
Yeah, but I mean, again, maybe I'm just choosing to be more optimistic, but I think that if and when they do start, the NHL and NBA have the best, you know, the most likelihood to succeed.
And you might be right, Rick, because as they go throughout the process of playing games, teams will be eliminated and there'll be less participants. So that certainly helps you in terms of lowering the number and decreasing the risk of spread. But with baseball, I mean, they haven't started their season. With the NFL, they haven't started their season. And we're talking about those two groups getting started over the course of the next, you know, 4 to 6 weeks. And it's just, you're thinking about what's going to happen and what it's going to look like. And when you incorporate the travel and go into these different cities, if you don't have the athletes in a bubble, if you're not monitoring them around the clock throughout the course of the season, then you run the risk of one of these guys getting infected and then transmitting the virus to everybody else on the team and to the teams that they're playing against. And I know you can't eliminate all the risk, but if you don't have a bubble-like environment, or have bubble cities like the NHL is using, I don't know how you're going to be able to get through an entire season. You're talking about a 3-4 month proposition. I don't see how that's possible.
Well, I think that's part of the way. I mean, again, no one wants anyone to get sick, but the reason why, outside of ramping up and getting guys in shape, to have guys back with, you know, 3 week camps and everything else, is the kind. It's a test run. I mean, you're a guinea pig. How is this going to work? How are the protocols going to work? You know, if a guy tests negative, but, you know, he has it because it's the first day and he just so happened to test negative, or it's a false negative or whatever else, how does that affect the team? And at least with the 3 weeks, if guys do get it, they'll have time to get through it and then be available when the season starts. And hopefully at that point have the antibodies to make sure they don't get it again.
Yeah. If you cannot get it again, right? We've had that gal who apparently contracted it two separate times.
Yeah, but they made it sound like that whatever this COVID-19 is now will morph at some point, or if it's not already, you know, started to morph. seems to be less deadly at this point,
mm-hmm.
the more we know about it. But yeah, these are all questions that no one really has good answers to. Long-term effects, long-term ramifications.
Absolutely.
I think that's partly why DeMora Smith is so aggravated that, you know, Tom Brady, Russell Wilson, these guys aren't listening to what the NFLPA has been saying. Like, how do you argue, you know, where does your leverage go if you're the NFLPA as far as health protocols and everything else, safety of players, is if your players are ignoring what you're telling them? Like, how do you argue that to owners?
Yeah, I mean, I think it makes it difficult for D to do his job. But the one thing that I will say when the NFLPA and the NFL owners are trying to nail down these protocols and the agreements that they're going to try to figure out in terms of a return to play, there absolutely has to be an option for players to sit out this year if they choose to because of the risks associated with COVID-19. Like, one thing that we've seen from this, you've got a range of different opinions across the political arena, across this country, and it's an intensely personal decision on whether or not you're willing to put yourself in harm's way to continue to play the sport that you love and essentially do your job. I don't think that you can say that there's a right or wrong decision, and so you have to be able to offer the NFL players the option of being able to sit out. I don't know how D and the NFLPA come to any kind of agreement with the league office if you don't have that option in there for players that deem the risk too high to return to play.
No, I think that you're going to have players that just say it's not worth it for us. And I don't know that it's going to be the superstars. I don't know that it's going to be the Tom Brady's and the Russell Wilson's, but the second, third tier, because you've seen it in baseball and you've seen it in basketball. I mean, Ryan Zimmerman is not going to play this year. Joe Ross is not going to play this year. Anthony Rizzo apparently is really considering not playing. He hasn't decided yet. Spencer Dinwiddie tests positive for COVID-19. He's not sure what he's going to do. DeAndre Jordan tests positive. He's going to skip Orlando. Ian Desmond opts out. I mean, these are legitimate players, and Ian Desmond, will get into his story a little bit more in a little while as well, because it goes beyond just COVID. But, I mean, this is not one guy. Guys, this is a bunch of pretty decent, well-known players that have said, we're not coming back.
And you have to respect that decision, Dave.
I do.
There's nothing that anybody can say about these guys, and I don't think you can be critical of them weighing all of the different factors and deciding to make a choice that's going to, you know, affect some teams and their potential to compete this year. You can't say that he's not a team guy just because he's making a decision not to put himself and his family at risk with the coronavirus. You can't say that. So I think that as it pertains to the NFL, they were talking about the negotiations and what that would look like. They absolutely have to have a provision in place that will allow players that feel uncomfortable with the current situation with the pandemic to allow them not to play this year and not to be penalized for not playing.
That seems like a slippery slope in the NFL. I can't imagine how that negotiation is going to go. I mean, how does that work? So in Major League Baseball, if your health risk is high, that if you contract COVID-19, there could be some long-term ramifications or you won't handle it well. You saw that with the Minnesota Twins and their coaches, the two coaches, but they'll get paid. So, I mean, if you're at a higher risk, you can opt out and you'll still get paid. How does that work in the NFL? I mean, one of the
categories. You won't get paid.
So they won't get paid.
Yeah, they won't get paid. No.
Even if you don't play, you're not going to get paid. If you're at a higher risk, you don't think, yeah?
Yeah, if you don't play, you're not going to get paid. No. I mean, maybe there might be some extenuating circumstances, but I have a hard time seeing players in the NFL, if they don't play, getting paid by the league. I just don't see that.
Yeah, because one of the things coming out now is, I think we talked about this for the last couple of weeks, is, you know, guys that weigh as much as, you know, offensive and defensive linemen are at a higher risk.
Yeah, obesity, high blood pressure, all of those different things that come along with being overweight.
Which is interesting, too, because the definition of obesity, I mean, you wouldn't – I mean, normally you'd be like, no, that guy's – he's just the big guy. He's in good shape or whatever. But, I mean,
no.
You start looking at the BMI scale and everything else.
No. Those guys are morbidly obese.
No, those guys are morbidly obese. But there are guys like – I mean, it's 6 feet. When you look at the BMI index, they were talking about this on Golic and Wingle this morning. I mean, if you're just like a really muscular guy. You weigh – you know, you're 6 feet, but you weigh, you know, 240 or 235. That's too – you're considered too big.
Yes.
You can consider it a health risk. So could you imagine that? I mean, how many NFL players, according to those charts, would be health risk, the higher higher health
risk.
I
mean, Saquon Barkley could be considered obese.
Which is crazy. But
right, again, I mean, it could be the best shape of anyone you've ever met in your life, and he could be considered obese.
Which I guess to Chris's point, if you opt out in the NFL, even if you're at a higher risk, I would have a hard time believing that you're going to get paid. Because there are, I mean, of all the leagues, I mean, what percentage of the NFL players could say legitimately, I'm at a higher health risk?
Probably a lot of them.
A lot of them. But they also have a high percentage of guys that can't go an entire year without receiving any checks from their club.
Right. And probably, Chris, the highest amount of guys that are very replaceable in the game as well.
Oh, no question about it, Dave. No question about it. So, I mean, yeah, NFL players will be in a tough spot when it comes to being able to make this decision. But, I mean, at least if you're DeMaurice Smith, you have to give guys the option to be able to sit out and not be penalized for it. And so them working out the logistics on what that looks like, whether the contract tolls or whether it just goes into 2021 year, all of those different things have to be figured out. But the reality is that you have to give guys that option. Because we saw with hockey, we saw with baseball, we saw with basketball, those leagues gave the players the option to sit out if they're uncomfortable with where we're at with this pandemic. So I think that the NFL has to afford their athletes that same consideration. I don't see any other way forward in terms of being able to come to an agreement on protocols, health and safety measures, all of those different things. You have to give that to the players.
I would say this, though, and again, going back to the NBA and NHL being in bubbles, I mean, at least you're away, like you have the ability to be away from your family. With Major League Baseball and in the NFL, you have to choose. I mean, you'd have to make the decision, like, I'm gonna quarantine myself away from my family and decide to kind of create my own little bubble.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
But, I mean, if you want to, it's what we do. Professional athletes, it's what we do, right? I'm sure, for the most part, every professional athlete at this point is going stir crazy, trying to, you know, work out or whatever you're trying to do. I mean, if you trust your league and you want to play, I mean, they're going to make it as safe as humanly possible. I mean, I would say what the NFL can offer is probably more safe than what Tom Brady is doing right now with his teammates.
I would agree with that.
Yeah.
But is the NFL truly safe?
No.
No, nothing's truly safe. Nothing you do is going to be truly safe. I mean, going to the grocery store, I mean, you can take every precaution, but you're not going to be... I mean, Nick Watney still has no idea how he got COVID-19.
Right.
No idea. Brooks Koepka apparently is, like, so strict with the people around him. I mean, it's social distancing, not letting anyone else, masks, everything else, and his caddy got it. So you don't know, but I mean...
I'll put it to you this way, Rick. I hear what you're saying, but when it comes to DeAndre Jordan and Spencer Dinwiddie, those two guys believe they got it due to the mandated return to Brooklyn that the NBA put in place, like returning to your city and then before you go to Orlando. They feel like that's when they ended up getting the coronavirus. And so, I mean, in looking at the NBA, I feel like they're much more proactive as a league in terms of trying to make sure that they keep their athletes safe than the NFL. Now, we'll see what happens, but when I heard a couple of weeks ago that the NFL was only planning on testing each player 3 times a week, I said that that's not enough. They have to do more. And if they're going to go into this situation with that type of frequency with testing, then I can't say that they're doing everything that they can to try to keep their athletes as safe as possible.
Yeah, but I think, I mean, as you get closer, I think that mindset probably changes with the amount of money that you would lose. Whatever it would cost you to make sure you test guys every single day, or if that was what was... You know, that's what your doctors were telling you was the safest way to do it. I mean, it's in
I would hope so.
Best, it's in each league's best interest to keep, you know,
of
to
course.
Keep these guys
the more
healthy.
Testing, the better.
Yeah, I mean, financially, you can't. These sports can't afford to not come back. They can't. I mean, what are the owners going to do if the NBA doesn't come back or finish? What do you think is going to happen to their CBA? It's going to get ripped up.
They're going to be ravaged.
That CBA.
Yeah.
NHL doesn't come back and finish this. I mean, there's going to be long-term ramifications for the players.
In any of these sports.
With
in
baseball
any of these
doesn't
sports,
play the
but I'm so glad, I'm
season.
So glad the NFL, Dave, the NFL locked in that CBA
uh-huh.
before all of this stuff went down. Like, I'm glad that deal got done. Because, yeah, we are going to take a hit in revenue, and the salary cap is going to stay flat because of what's going on for the next couple of years. But the reality is you got 10 more years of labor peace, it gives you more opportunities for both sides to come together to try to mitigate the damage that has been done financially for the NFL. With these other leagues, you just don't know. Well, with, at least with hockey, they're trying to work out a CBA. So that's moving in the positive direction. But I mean, with some of these sports, you look at it and you say, yeah, they have to come back. They have to try to play these games. But to me, the priority has to be trying to keep the athletes as safe as possible. And you'll get a gauge on how serious the NFL is taking it when we actually get the official protocols that they're going to put in place.
Yeah, it's all, you know, we felt like we were, you know, getting past the worst of it. And I don't know that I feel like that now. And you can tell the players don't necessarily feel like that now as well.
What did you expect?
That have already said they're not going to play. What, right?
But what did you expect? I mean, once everyone was back, I mean, everyone's been off doing their own thing. And again, I mean, depending on which player you ask, how serious they're, where they live, how seriously they're taking it.
I got to be honest, Rick. I didn't expect that we would be here. I thought that New York was going to get the worst of it with the coronavirus,
which we did.
Once we got past it, then you know this thing would subside. I didn't think that it would be as rampant throughout the rest of the country as we're now seeing it. I didn't see that.
You have to imagine. I mean, and again, maybe this is just because my in-laws live in Florida. I mean, did I think it would get as crazy as it is? Probably not as crazy. But, I mean, you're asking for trouble if you just choose to ignore it because it hasn't happened in your state yet.
You're right. I agree with that. No.
Yeah, I think we all agree with that. I think that's why we're in the position we're in.
But it's less to do, in my opinion, about, you know, the state opening up. And I think it has more to do with how people in that state are approaching social distancing, masks, and everything else. You got to close because you don't trust the people.
You know what it is, man? They've politicized the coronavirus and handling it so badly that people don't know what to listen to. People don't know who to trust in terms of the best information, the best practices to limit the spread. I think that's exactly where we're at right now, and it's unfortunate because people are losing their lives as a result.
The only thing I'd say,
we got over 2.6 million cases of coronavirus in this country, 130,000 people dead as of today.
But what's the downside to wear the mask? That's what I just don't understand. Even if you don't really believe in it, what's the downside to wearing a mask?
I couldn't tell you, Dave.
That to me was so frustrating.
Dave. Basic freedoms, apparently. It's your basic freedom to choose not to wear a mask.
Yeah, but it's really kind of not.
But it goes back to the discrepancy of the message. There hasn't been one voice, one message. So people that say I don't want to wear a mask will present you with a case from whoever it is. I mean, I listened to some this morning. It's an MD. She's got the qualifications that says wearing a mask doesn't do anything. So if that's what you choose to believe, you can find someone that said that.
You can find someone.
But we have an example of it working in our own city. Like that's the part of it that doesn't make sense. If you're doing that in New York City, probably the most densely populated area in the country, and we were able to get through it and get on the other side of it and flatten the curve effectively by wearing masks, by mandating that through legislation and doing the social distancing and taking all the precautions, if it'll work here, then why wouldn't it work throughout the country?
It would.
So, I mean, anybody saying anything to the contrary is not somebody that has the best interests of this country in mind and the people that are here. They just don't. That's irresponsible to go out there and say something like that.
Yeah, I think we would. Most people listening right now would wholeheartedly agree with that.
I don't know, man. I just feel like if we all did the right things, we would be closer to getting back to some sense of normalcy, the way of life that we knew before the pandemic. And that would mean being able to be closer to having live team sports and having confidence, or more confidence than we do today, that these sports, once they restart, will be able to finish their seasons.
Mm-hmm.
But I think this entire time, what these leagues are doing, and I think they'll never say this, but they're falling back on the percentages. I think the reason why, once Rudy Gobert tested positive, the league shut down is because there wasn't enough information. Like, how is this going to affect our players? And now the more people that have got sick, And the more results we have of people in a certain, you know, age demographic getting through this, I think they're trying to collect as much information as possible. It's like a giant experiment at this point. Like, what do you think college football is doing right now?
I don't think they know what they're doing right now.
I don't understand. Well, no. I'm right there with you, Dave.
Well, because they have no idea how it works. Like, they don't. People don't have the answers as to how. We know it's very easily spreadable. But, okay, well, you can say that, but if I socially distance in a gym, how spreadable is it? Well, we're going to find out now because we're going to put these kids in the gym. And apparently, you know, indoors is not a great is not a great place to be with this.
You know, and you know, Rick, you're absolutely right. I think that that's the mentality of college athletics. But here's where it gets a little dicey for me. I just feel like when it comes to professional sports, you're talking about grown men making these decisions and being able to assess the risk and dealing with the unknown. But for the NCAA and all of these conferences, why would you drop these kids in a situation where you don't have information about how it could potentially affect them short-term and long-term? Why would you run the risk? I mean, I know that it's motivated by
money,
by the financial gain, but I just don't think that's enough of a reason to put these kids in jeopardy, especially when you realize they're not employees.
Listen, I don't disagree with you, and that goes back to our perfect world conversations that we always have. The reality is that the financiers are pushing all these sports to get back.
Of course.
And again, they're leaning on the fact that if you're in good shape and of a certain age, COVID-19, even if you get it, you'll get through it okay.
They better hope they're right, because like we've said a million times on this show, if there's that one...
That's what they're betting on.
Well, if there's that, you know, but the odds are that one person, something bad's going to happen with.
Yeah, they're betting on that, Rick, but I don't understand why they're asking the kid to assume all the risk, though. They don't want any liability. They don't want to be accountable for it, but they want to be the ones to stand to make all of the money as a result of those kids putting themselves in harm's way. Like, the risk-reward is off when it comes to collegiate athletics, especially with college football. Like, with pro sports, it's like, all right, this individual player, a grown man, is making a decision to return to play, and he knows the risk, but he's doing that because he deems it worth it. Like, the financial gain is worth it. For these kids, I mean, what are they getting outside of playing for the love of the game and playing for an opportunity to get to the next level? What are they getting out of it? Nothing.
Well, exactly that. That's what they're getting out of it.
Yeah, but how many have the chance to play at the next level?
Exactly. That's exactly.
They don't, which is further, I mean, which also speaks to the point that this is as good as it's going to get. Do I want to give up a year of my football career when this is it? Like, this is it for some of the kids. For most of the kids, they won't be professional football players. So this is it. Do I want to give up a year? And it's not just the kids. I mean, you saw when in Ohio State, all these parents signed the waiver.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, I mean, it's just sports in general, man. I mean, owners, commissioners, they all feed off the fact that they know athletes want to do one thing. They want to play. That's what we've done our entire lives.
That's their weakness.
And that's true, Rick, but you got to protect the kids from themselves, man.
You got the parents.
You got teenagers and young 20-somethings. You got to protect them from themselves.
Yeah, but who do you blame more? I mean, who do you blame more, the schools or the parents?
The parents.
Signing the waivers.
The parents. Now, if you're a parent, your entire job in life is to protect your children.
Okay, I mean, did you hear anything coming out of Ohio State that
no.
a player or their parents didn't sign a waiver? The
no,
Buckeye
I think
pledge?
They all signed them, didn't they?
I didn't hear otherwise.
Yeah, it's bad. It's really bad. And I agree with you, Chris. College sports is really, really disheartening because the kids almost don't even have a voice of their own. Let's go to Dave in Jersey. Dave, lead us off. You're on 98.7 ESPN.
Hey, good morning, guys.
What's up, Dave?
I'm trying to figure out why sports and public figures are making this their personal health public, you know, to the world. Because, you know, I can understand, you know, if you're a basketball player and you twist your ankle, you know, it's a medical report on that. But to me, this is like more personal when someone, you know, go get tested for COVID. And I don't understand why they make it public, you know, to the world. I don't know if it's mandatory.
Or, it's the players. You know, each individual player. I mean, the league can say, you know, how many guys tested positive. They're not allowed to say the names. if the player chooses to on Instagram or social media,
right, well, that's
tell everyone that he
choice.
Tested, that's their personal choice.
Right.
But the leagues aren't saying
I can come out and say I have
players.
A strep throat, right? I can say I have a strep throat. My doctor can't take any kind of medium and say Rothenberg is suffering from X, Y, or Z.
No, the leagues,
no,
I mean, the leagues.
That. The HIPAA laws right. won't let them do that. But
exactly.
The one thing I will say for the players that are announcing their positive tests on social media, I think the players are doing a service to our country by acknowledging the fact that, you know, anybody can get this. Like when you hear that DeAndre Jordan or Spencer Dinwiddie or Ezekiel Elliott has coronavirus, I mean, these are the best athletes in the world. And they're telling you that they are affected by the coronavirus when they can get infected. I mean, anybody can be infected. I think that should just, you know, heighten the urgency that we have to take all the precautions necessary in order to keep ourselves safe and keep everybody else in our community safe.
Yeah, I think that we all agree. And then I think you get the outliers of the people who just don't get it.
I think what they're trying to do is be a, I mean, the reality is athletes are role models, right? And a lot mm-hmm. of people look up to athletes. And to Chris's point, we all look at our athletes as superheroes. And if our superheroes can get it, I mean, even
anybody can get it.
Anybody can get it. And I think some of the most, you know, powerful examples of that, I think obviously the Rudy Gobert situation, I think, you know, Von Miller getting it and hearing the story behind it, like he didn't go anywhere, he was self-quarantined. I mean, he had food brought in and stuff like that and he still got it. I mean, for all those people that say, you know, I can't get it. Well, I mean, if a professional athlete doing all the right things got it, you know, guess what, dummy? You can get it.
You are not immune to this by any stretch. Chris in Elmont. Chris, you're next up on 98.7.
Hey, how are you guys today?
We're okay. What's going on, Chris?
You know, I think we're debating back and forth of if sports can play, but the question isn't if sports can play. It's can we do it here in America? European soccer is going fine. Korean baseball hasn't had a problem. It's been our handling of this that has prevented sports, I feel, from coming back. And it's everywhere. My hockey league is about to start. Men's hockey league, they have 22 teams that are ready to play hockey. I don't get it. And that's intramural men's.
Well, you get it because you're an adult. I mean, my nephew in Florida already started a hockey camp. His spring hockey's already started. I mean, I got an email the other day that you know, hockey camps are opening up for Milo, which he's not going to. But, I mean, it's you get to a certain point that this thing's not going anywhere. You're going to leave it up to each individual to make their decision. And then whoever decides they want to be a part of it,
yeah.
Now you're trusting that they're going to do the right thing.
Yeah, youth baseball has started in Connecticut. And it's starting back up. Games are starting in New York State next week for youth baseball.
And you think that's the right thing to do?
I don't know. Okay. I mean, probably not, but I guess
when's going to be the right time, though? At what point? What's going to be the right time?
Yeah, that,
if this thing is going to, if it's going to get worse in the fall, when's the right time?
Well, I mean, we're talking about being 3 months into a pandemic. I would like to give our scientists, our medical professionals more time to get more information and establish better treatment protocols and potentially a vaccine. To me, that's when you're talking about the right time for youth sports. Maybe that's just me, but I just don't feel like it's worth putting kids at risk right now when we don't have a lot of information about this coronavirus or what it could be this coming fall, all of those different things. I don't feel like that's the right thing to do. And now we start to hear about kids being infected with this new syndrome as a result of the coronavirus and kids are actually dying. Like I don't think that makes a whole lot of sense. That's just me though.
Yeah, I don't think, I mean, at this point, I mean, I would have a hard time. I mean, not a hard time. There's no decision for me. Like, Milo's not going to be doing youth sports in my current situation. So yeah. That's not going to happen. But, I mean, sure. People are at a point, it's been, what, 4 months?
4 months of being locked away.
It's been 4 months that they want to get back out. And they feel like as long as they take the proper precautions, and again, going back to the fact that outside of the Kawasaki syndrome and everything else, kids that get it, seem to deal with it well, they're willing to take the risk. And I think the numbers that you're seeing in professional sports now and him bringing up European soccer and everything else, you're going to have, you're going, the protocols that they're going to use once the season start haven't taken place yet. Those are not being implemented. So they're bringing everyone together, testing, which they have to do. And then yeah, you'll probably see bigger numbers now, I would expect, because everyone's out doing their own thing. They're not as stringent with the testing and everything else. And then once they get everyone in a certain spot and they now all of a sudden implement the protocols, I think you'll probably see less positive tests, I would imagine.
Let's take a listen. Here's Buster Olney, Golic and Wingo this morning, discussing player concern with the season on the verge of returning.
My projections are based on what I'm hearing at the team level about how this is all playing out. You know, I've heard phrases like false hustle. You know, why are we doing this? This is crazy. And a lot of it, obviously, is because there's things going on that are completely outside of the control of Major League Baseball. You know, I wrote in a column the other day that for baseball to attempt to restart right now is like getting into a sailboat as you see the outer bands of a hurricane on the horizon. Because you think about, you know, the surge in numbers, about 160,000 new cases in this country over the last 4 days, and they're all centered in the most important states for Major League Baseball, Florida, Texas, Arizona, California, where so many players live. And so what I'm hearing at the team level is, great, all of these guys are going to be getting on planes to go to and report to their respective teams amid all these surging numbers, and there's a lot of curiosity and a lot of concern about what the positive test numbers are later this week.
So, I mean, Buster has been either a realist or negative the entire way through with what he said. But I don't think it's entirely negative. I think he's trying to be, you know, realistic with his take here, guys.
Yeah, I'm with you on this one, Dave. I don't think this is Buster going out of his way to try to be negative. I think he's just being realistic about the information that he has and the concerns that have been expressed by people affiliated with these Major League Baseball clubs. And so, yeah, I mean, those are four really important states when it comes to Major League Baseball: California, Texas, Florida, and Arizona. Like, a lot of players live in those states, and a lot of those states are on the uptick in terms of number of cases, new cases of people getting infected. So, yeah, I mean, it's a scary proposition. We'll see what happens with everything in the summer camp. But I just, I mean, to look at what's going on in the country and think that these sports won't be affected with the restart, even with protocols put in place, I think that's naive.
They'll be affected. I mean, there's no doubt they'll be affected. I mean, it's how quickly they can identify who's positive and make sure it doesn't spread through a team. But, I mean, you're relying on with Major League Baseball, again, because it's not a bubble. You're traveling. I mean, you're not – the other thing I don't really understand, which makes no sense, if you're not going to have fans in seats, why are we doing, like, individual series? Why are we doing three-game sets? Why wouldn't you have the team fly there one time, play the five games, and then –
be done with them.
And be done with it. Why, multiple times, we're going to go back and forth? You come here once we play five games. I go there once we play five games, and that's it. Eliminate as much travel as possible. But they don't want to do that, apparently. I mean, which makes no sense. Here's what it's going to come down to, Chris, is that financially it doesn't make any sense for these sports to completely lose a season. That's the last thing that they want to do. So they'll put all the protocols in place, and regardless of your state is a hot spot or not, they're going to hope, fingers crossed, maybe pie in the sky, that their players show up, play, train, whatever it is, and then from the facility go back to their houses and continue to do the right things.
I hear you, Rick, and I'm not disputing whether or not that's the mentality. I think that's what all of these commissioners and these team owners are thinking. I just have a problem with the fingers crossed proposition when it could cost somebody their life.
But that's all we're doing.
Or somebody becoming gravely ill and having effects for the rest of their life. That's the problem that I have with it.
But, Chris, I mean, in reality, that's what everyone is doing. Everyone that owns a business, everyone that's trying to get back on their feet, that's, I mean, their employees. That's kind of where you're at.
Yeah, and you're right. And we talked about this all the time, what's essential, what's non-essential. For small business owners, opening up their business feels like it's essential. It feels like it's worth putting their lives in harm's way. When it comes to sports, man, I look at one of those things where, unless you're going to try to isolate the players, completely keep them in a bubble type of situation, I feel like you're absorbing a lot of risk.
I understand what you don't like. And I think this is, can be, I mean, the same thing can be said for a lot of people. Now, the whole idea of opting out is, it's a foreign concept to me. I mean, I've told you guys this plenty of times. It's my job to play hockey. I would show up and I would play. I would take that risk. Mm-hmm. And I'm sure there's people that feel like, you know, it's essential to them because they got to pay their bills. They can't afford not to have a season, so they're willing to take the risk. I think what makes you uncomfortable and what probably makes a lot of these athletes that are, you know, deciding that they're going to opt out uncomfortable is that once you sign up and you go there, it's out of your control. Like, if I'm an NFL player, I can do all the right things and be, you know,
and still get
crossing.
Yeah.
Because you got, now you're putting your faith in your teammates.
But that's my point.
That they're going to be doing the right things.
That's my whole point, though. Like, if you're going to have a restart, then just have all the players isolate in a bubble. And if you're talking about having them there for 150 days, then so be it. That's what it has to be in order to move forward with the season. And if you give them that kind of all or nothing proposition, the majority of the players that were going to decide to play anyway would go along with it. And I think that's a way that you can keep everybody safe. You feel me?
I know exactly what you're saying.
That's what makes the most 100%.
Sense. 100%. I mean, not and with football too. I mean, not only are you in baseball. I mean, not only are you at the mercy of your teammates, you're at the mercy of the team you're playing against.
Yeah.
Like, they're also doing the right things.
And you tell me. I mean, we'll get into it later. Do you really trust other players, a lot of them, all of them really, to do the right thing?
No.
No.
Of course you don't.
You're going to have some knuckleheads, Dave.
Right, exactly.
Look what happened. Go back to what happened with the women's soccer. The whole team had to pull out. Because a bunch of them decided they wanted to go to a bar, and six women up.
Or look at Novak Djokovic dancing with no shirt in a club. No. I mean, God, I'm sorry. Athletes, and just not even athletes, people in general will not do the right thing.
If you give them a choice, Dave, that's the thing. If you give them a choice, they won't do the right thing.
Yep.
My thing is take away the choice.
Yeah.
You don't have a choice. If you want to do this, then this is how it's going to be done. If you're serious about trying to keep everybody as safe as possible.
Today on ESPN Daily, Cam Newton's a New England Patriot. Was it the move of the century, or could it backfire here? Whether this means the Pats are back on ESPN Daily. Subscribe now wherever you get your podcasts. Let's bring him in, the notorious Andy from Merrick. Good morning, Andy. How are you?
Good morning, DCR. I got some baseball questions for you this morning.
All right, we are ready. Fire away.
Let's roll.
Starting with Chris, of course. Larry Doby was, of course, the second black man to play Major League Baseball after Jackie Robinson. Mm-hmm. On June 30th, 1978, that's exactly 42 years ago today, he became the second black manager after Frank Robinson. What team did Larry Doby manage in 1978?
Chicago White Sox.
Bang!
Boom!
Wow! Nice.
Nice, Chris.
Way to start out, Chris.
Good start.
All right, we move over to Rick, our resident Mets fan.
That felt very long-winded, by the way. Couldn't you just have started with asking what team did Larry Doby manage against?
Yeah, that was more of a story. Yeah,
he had to get the backdrop, though.
I'm Andy from Merrick, and listen to me talk.
Let's go quickly to Rick. Tom Stephen went to 9 All-Star games as a Met pitcher. What Met pitcher ranks number 2 with 4 All-Star appearances?
Oh, most All-Star appearances by a Mets pitcher.
Not named Tom Seaver,
because he has 9.
He has 9. So you said it's 4?
Correct.
I feel like this is a trick question. Dave, you have any idea?
Did he go all 4 as a Met?
Yes, these are as a Met.
I'm thinking, I mean, I don't know.
Are you thinking starter or reliever?
Oh, I don't know.
That's the question.
I wasn't even thinking that.
Because I have a reliever in mind.
It's a starter.
It's a starter?
Yep.
4 times. DeGrom's gone how many times?
How about Gooden?
Yeah. Four times pitcher, starter.
It could be Gooden, right?
Yeah, I mean, it could be. DeGrom's gone how many times? 3 times?
It's got to be Gooden, no?
DeGrom's gone, I think, 3. That's not him. All right, I mean, what do we get to lose? Go Gooden?
I would say Gooden.
Final answer?
Yeah, okay. Final answer.
Doc Gooden is correct.
Nice.
Nicely both, done, Ricky.
Both DeGrom and Matlock, three apiece. All right, David, your Mets question.
Oh, God.
Nolan Ryan in Mets history has given up the fewest hits per nine innings at 6.51.
Okay.
This left-hander ranks number two in club history. Name him.
All right, my first thought, and this is not my final answer, is Sid Fernandez. Rick, what do you think?
I like where your head's at. I like where your head's at. I can't lie.
I mean, he said a lefty. This is a starter. It has to be a starter, right?
It's a starter.
Go with that sexy gut of yours.
Oh, God.
Go with that
two-tack. Sid Fernandez.
Sid Fernandez, El Cid, is correct.
Yes.
Nice. Wow.
Look at us.
Three guys on some tough questions. As always, stay healthy.
Oh, wonderful. Now, Rick, doesn't that put
as
you
always,
in a great mood now?
Stay healthy, my friends.
Yes. He's the smartest man in the world.
Puts me in a great mood.
Most interesting man in the world.
I show up in a bad mood by 11 a.m. usually. Good mood.
There we go. That was terrific. Chris, you were dominant.
I feel good about my performance, Dave. I think we did a good job today. I don't understand why you guys berated Andy for giving a little context on the question he was asking me.
It felt very long-winded, the first question.
Just talk about
it felt
Larry
like a story
Dobie
with a question attached. Right.
Significance of it.
Well, I'm not saying there's not significance, but he could have just said, what team did Larry Doby manage?
Yeah, but I just don't think that does it complete justice, you know, when you start talking about the individual.
Okay.
That's all I'm saying.
Okay. That's fine. But needless to say,
we all know Dave's a bad guy. But more importantly, I mean, as far as Christopher Canty performances with Andy from Merrick, I would put that was number one on the list.
That was the jewel.
Didn't even finish the
question.
I thought
the one last week with Jeff Fisher was more impressive. That was just me.
How quickly
you got. He didn't even finish the question. He got through the story and then couldn't get through the question before, boom.
When you answer the question before they finish the question, and you're right, that's a different level.
Well, it's just one of those things that I know because of the historical significance of Larry Doby.
Yeah, that was beautiful. The way it rolled off your tongue was beautiful. All right, Mike Tannenbaum.
Can we also give some props to Santiago too with the rejoin music? I appreciate him bringing a little Jadakiss in there with the Jadakiss Fabulous Versus last night. I appreciate that, Ray. No, a lot of people didn't pick up on that, but I just want to say
Santi's been very
you.
Good. Santi's been very good during the pandemic.
He's been dynamic. Yeah. I would say that during the pandemic, especially now with all this extra sleep he's getting, he's been dynamic.
Yeah. Well, he doesn't have to worry about the Knicks. He doesn't have to worry about the Rangers right now. So he has really been dialed in, and he's done a great job.
DiPietro, Canty, and Rothenberg, weekdays at 10 on 98.7 ESPN.